Hello, diamond beauties and interdimensional beings of light. It's Lisa here, your mystic guide, inviting you to come and take a ride with me as we journey through space and time. Our mission is to create conscious content for 1111D, sharing resources of light for the new reality. Welcome to the Buddhist Biohacker.
Buddhist Biohacker would like to thank our partners Block Therapy, Purity Coffee, Dry Farm Wines, Omnia, and 2-1 Photography. Information can be found on lisamgunshore.com. Join our forum at miwi.com/Buddhist Biohacker and watch live on YouTube on the Buddhist Biohacker channel.
Good morning, everybody. Happy Friday. It's so great to see everybody today. It is Friday before Labor Day weekend, and welcome to another episode of the Buddhist Biohacker. We are creating conscious content for 1111D, and I was really excited to have Satyam back, and we had to do a little bit of rescheduling because I had strep throat this week, but I am really excited to end my week with you, Satyam, so welcome back, of course, always.
Oh, wonderful to be here. I was looking forward to it all week, so a true pleasure to be here.
Me too. And you know what? It's a really great topic. Your topic today is conscious breathing for health, and considering I've had nothing but respiratory challenges the last 2 weeks, it's a really good topic because breathing is so important. So let's dive in. What do you want to talk about with breathing today? I'm excited.
Okay. Well, there's a lot to it, right? I mean, we hardly can exist at all without our breath. And so breathing itself is the essence of life. It's that the yogis say that on each and every inhale, we're drawing life into the body. And on the exhale, we temporarily expire. And then again, new life on the inhalation. And this exists on all levels. And so today I thought we would talk a little bit about the theory, maybe go through some practical breathing experiments or modules or practicums, and go ahead in that way.
Cool.
Maybe we should just start with taking two deep breaths, the two of us, and maybe whoever's listening or on the replay, as may be. So when we breathe, we want to sit tall, right? We want to use that core. We want to sit upright. Draw the shoulders up and back. Draw the chin back towards us. And then just close the eyes and have the hands in a comfortable position. And then for a proper breath, we're going to try and keep the shoulders and sternum immobile. We'll draw the breath in through the nasal passages and all the way down into the low belly. And it's a bit counterintuitive, but the belly will expand as the inhale, as the air goes in. So the navel point goes out on the inhale. And navel to spine on the exhale. And just everyone, let's just take two breaths on our own in this very simple pattern. And then when you like, gently open the eyes, relax, get good and comfortable. And so the breath, it never gets boring. You would think it would get boring. The only time it gets boring is if we don't breathe correctly. But when we breathe properly, there is such a fundamental shift in our physical presence, in our mental vibration, that it's just a wonderful gift to be conscious of the fact that we are breathing beings. And so one of the things to know about the breath is that it's our helping tool in all realms of life. Physically, the breath is, it oxygenates the blood, it enriches us, it does so much for us physically, and then it can, and it changes the blood pressure. Then psychically, it can reduce stress, it can enhance memory, it can enhance our thinking. And then spiritually, it's a big tool in spirit, in meditation. And there's pranayama, there's all different aspects, and all these things we can discuss. But one thing that's very, very palpable for us is that, and this is such a unique point, is that the breath is the linking point between the physical body and the psychic body. And the physical body is something that we have pretty good awareness about in the most mundane sense. You know, if someone says, point to your toes, everyone can, even a four-year-old can point to their toes. Or how many fingers do we have? These are very, everyone can, the basic outline of their physical body, people know. You ask people about the outline or vibration of their psychic body, they'll be stumped. What is that? Where? And it's downright elusive. You know, people say, how come I can't think of the word I want today? How come I feel anxious today? And, you know, if you feel a pebble in your shoe, if something, your foot's bothering you and you see that there's a pebble in your shoe, it's very easy to solve. But psychic problems are not like that. The yogis say that to solve a physical problem, you need mind. You use the psychic level to solve. That's why animals, they have physical problems. You know, the proverbial splinter in the tiger's paw, and it can't solve it. It's going, ow, 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 has tons of physical strength, but it cannot solve the problem because it takes mind. It takes psychic. And similarly, the psychic level is very elusive for us. And the yogis say the way to solve psychic problems, go up a level, get into the spiritual realm. Then you can diagnose psychic problems. So what I mean to say here is that the mind is such an elusive yet powerful force for us. And so how do we control this mind? How do we control this mind that dominates our entire existence, that defines our existence? And the easiest tool we have is the breath. Hmm. Because the breath is such a simple thing, and the breath is the linking point between the physical body and the psychic body, and it can actually start to harness that mind. You can read 20,000 books on psychotherapy. You may not be able to harness your mind. You take two calm, full respirations, you'll start to harness that mind, that there will be some type of mental equipoise. And so the breath is a highly, highly unique, very much talked about, but often forgotten tool. And you would think that before we went to kindergarten, that everyone would be taught how to breathe properly. You got to be able to count to 20 or 10. You got to know your colors. But breathing, meh, you know.
Isn't that interesting, Satyam? I mean, at this point in my life, I feel like breath, meditation, quantum physics, like these are all things, you know, philosophy. Like, don't you think these are things we should be learning as children?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The yogis talk about that. And then it's part of your being. Rather than being philosophy, being some type of extraneous intellectual thing that you delve into in college, but it really has no, oftentimes, even the philosophy professors oftentimes don't live by that philosophy. It's not a living, breathing, module for them. It's an intellectual exercise. And so, but the yogis talk about that a philosophy, a full-throated philosophy of life should be inculcated early on. And then the children, they and it should be irrational, shouldn't be dogmatic or irrational or harmful or limiting. So that's one trick. It should be a proper philosophy, but that should be inculcated in a very practical way. And the yoga kindergartens that have been started around the world all imbibe that. And they the kids do. In fact, as my master's thesis, I did a anthropological, sociological, educational look at a yogi kindergarten in Portland, Oregon. And they were doing breathing and meditation every day and learning some of their existential queries in a very, you know, through song, through games, through different ways. So yeah, so no, absolutely. The earlier the better on those types of very fundamental things. You know, we live in a society where someone may become a very, very accomplished CEO, but they may not have any idea how to take care of their physical and mental body, you know, or how to breathe properly. So it's something that's overlooked, mm-hmm. certainly. And it's something that that it's a tool that we should be relying more on. And I think there's awareness growing, and I think that will only continue to grow, at least hopefully continue to grow, because it's such a key point.
Yeah.
So a lot of our physical ailments, a lot of our psychic ailments can be addressed just by breathing. Blood pressure, stress, anxiety, in the psychic realm, physical, both, that it's just a wonderful tool. And the breathing goes way back in yoga, Sada Shiva. They say Sada Shiva, Shiva means consciousness, Sada means always. That there was a yogi on the planet known as Sada Shiva. They say he was on the planet 7,000 years ago. But many of his teachings, he created the musical, the Indian scale in music, but lots and lots of teachings, and one of which was known as Swar Shastra, which is the science of breath control. Mm. And it talked about how breath is empowering physically. If you can't lift something, try breathing correctly and see if you can do it. And literally, you talk to any weightlifter, and as much as they have for regimens, you know, lifting regimens and nutritional regimens, breath work for them is extremely important. How to maximize your physical strength, the breath is absolutely key for that.
You know what's funny, Satyam, is when I was in junior high and high school, I studied opera and I took opera singing lessons all for like, I don't know, it was probably about 10 years through school. So I probably started fifth or sixth grade and went up. And so I always joke that time of my youth, really understanding diaphragmatic breathing and being able to sing and using those stomach muscles is yeah. like what trained me for meditation and breath. Well, that's my job.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And for that matter, I have a story of the reverse. I was involved in meditation for some years, and then I decided I would take private voice lessons.
Ah!
I'm always out of key. But she was amazed at the breath work on day one was all set. There was no problem because I was just using my standard yogic breathing. And she's like, oh, you know this already. And you took voice lessons. I said, no, I haven't taken voice lessons, but this is yoga. This
yes. is meditation.
Yeah. So there's a very strong link. So, and that's right. And breath work is just so key. And that's why everybody's grandma says, okay, take a deep breath. Right. I mean, it's everybody knows it, but have we really inculcated it? And it takes some type of discipline, something, you know, weightlifting, singing, study, some type of discipline to get a handle on the breath. And ultimately, just the discipline of life should be enough. You know, just the fact that we're alive, that we should utilize it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's an overlooked yet so accessible resource that when everybody, you don't have to go to the store, you don't have to have any particular garment on, you know, we're breathing all the time. And if we can maximize that breath, we'll be far more efficient, far more happy, far more comfortable.
Yeah.
So, but we can go into some of the nuts and bolts of breathing here theoretically and then practice them little by little. So,
yeah, I love it.
Okay, let's go into it. So, in the science of breath control known as Swaroshastra, there were basic limbs of the breath or aspects of breathing, and the inhalation, drawing the breath in. They say that life starts in the womb when the baby takes the first breath in the womb, and that's the beginning of life. And so each and every inhalation is the restart of rekindling of life. So that's the first limb. And then in the most basic sense, in Sanskrit, that the inhalation is known as purak. And then the exhalation is known as rechak. And so in a two-step breathing pattern, one can inhale and exhale. And you've got two, so, and then to create a little bit more ease in the mind, in the physical body, we've got another aspect to talk about or to practice is the ratio of the breath. How long are we going to inhale for, and how long are we going to exhale for? So if someone knows nothing about pranayama or other aspects of breathing, if someone just says, I'm going to slow down the exhalation, I'm going to breathe in a way that is 4 beats in and 8 beats out, or just say 1-2 ratio, then that will automatically slow down. Obviously, it'll slow down the respiratory rate, but it will start to change all the rhythms in your physical and mental body. That simple technique. Whereas the classic case of shallow breathing, when people get excited or anxious, you see the shoulders shrugging, they're only breathing into the thoracic region, and it's just wearing them out. So if one just takes, we can do it even just with the eyes open. Inhale, feel that breath go all the way down into the belly, and exhale twice as slowly. Yeah. And so just by doing that, one should be able to feel a palpable shift in their overall condition. And then we can work into a three-step breathing pattern. And this is, especially in a meditative sequence, this is where people can start to get realization just in their breath alone, or with a little bit of ideation with the breath. So with the three-step, we're adding an extra part. And so we have our inhalation, our purak, and then we put a spacer, what's called kumbhak, or a retention of breath, and then exhale, which is rechak. And so we can start by doing it a 1-1-2 ratio, where, and we can all do this together, we draw the breath in and then hold that breath, try and stay there, and exhale out. And we can do next round, we're gonna close the eyes for the second round. Inhale. Exhale. So here we've got these two dynamics of the stages of the breath and the ratio. And the more calm the mind becomes, the more meditative the mind becomes, the longer one can hold the breath. that sense of kumbhak, that retention of breath. Now, this should be done under careful instruction, not just for folks to kind of, I know everyone's taking it seriously, but just to be aware that some personalized instruction can be very helpful. But the yogis say that in the meditation, you can almost bring the whole cosmos to a standstill during that state of pause, during that state of kumbhak. And kumbhak contained with mantra or ideation is extremely powerful. But this tool of breathing is just a phenomenal and remarkable way to enhance and refine our whole human experience. And it is remarkable that we've been in a society that is quote unquote so advanced that has overlooked some of these this basic element. It should be taught to all students before they take exams. They should know how to breathe going into an examination. Every lawyer, every person for their, regardless of their occupation or student status, they should know. But then they should learn more specific and precise techniques for athletes in every stage of life. And it's an underused and under resourced and under researched tool for humanity. So this conscious breathing, using a two-step breathing and changing the ratio, using a three-step breathing, and it's in a typical minute we breathe between 12 and 20 times a minute.
Wow.
And when we do it in a day, it's around 19 to 22,000 breaths a day, which is just phenomenal. And as we become more adept at our breath, it becomes a learned practice that one will, it's like posture. You know, if you have very poor posture, you're going to stand in that posture all day long. That will be your natural, either with sway back or some type of, that will have a very detrimental effect on your psyche, on your physical body, on everything. And it's a matter of, but that habit forming, that once the posture is good, you're going to stand that way 99% of the time. And when you're not standing that way, you will unconsciously remind yourself, what's wrong? Something's wrong. It'll be feel like your shoes aren't tied properly. Something's wrong. Oh, I'm not standing properly, because you're so used to being in a proper posture. What I'm getting at here is that that these practices are habit forming, and that habit is a constant reminder to us. And so if we breathe consciously and we take some time during the day, 5 minutes in the morning, and maybe three breaths before each meal, and then 5 minutes in the evening, and we work on that, then it becomes a practice that we have at our disposal, and it will continue even when we're not consciously practicing it. It will always be there. It will be like our faithful friend. And when we're out of sync, we will quickly realize, we'll be quite aware that, wait a second, my breath is off. And so, and then it'll be quickly recovered as well. So it is something that is foundational to our days. It is inherent to our overall well-being, our physical strength, our psychic aptitude, our spiritual realization. And so this three-step breathing pattern of inhalation, retention of breath, exhalation, can literally, three of those breaths can recreate your whole psychic structure. And once the psychic structure changes, naturally the physical structure changes. The whole glandular system becomes balanced. It's actually, the more I think about it, it is such a phenomenal process that You would think that, you know, instead of having stop signs on every corner, there should be breathing signs on every corner. You know, just like, wait a second, are you moving correctly here? You know, because it really can change. I mean, it can, people who are about to get into a heated argument, it can cool their jets and say, wait, is this, a lot of fights are just irrational. People are fighting over knickknack things. They lost their temper. Their breath is off. And then if it's a reasonable point that they're discussing, then it should be done with a cool mind. And it should be, and then one will think more clearly. So we need breathing signs. I think you and I should come up with the design and the placement. And it won't be a for-profit thing. It'll be our gift to humanity. And we can put them around on, breathing. It is that foundational for your well-being. And to, we eat three times a day, maybe a snack or so. We breathe all day long.
Yeah.
It's constantly going on.
Is it true, Satyam? So I've heard, and I actually heard this recently too, was, you know, there's this belief or teaching that we only have so many breaths in a lifetime. So if you elongate your breaths, you elongate your life. I'm just wondering if you've heard that. What is your thoughts on that?
I think there's something to it, and there's something I would call old wives' tale as well. I think it's a little bit of a mix. It's true that both our heartbeats and our breaths are countable. But the question is that fixed for each and every human being, or is that predetermined before the birth of each and every human being? I tend to think that in this human life, we have a lot of scope and a lot of leeway to orient ourselves and the yogis don't think that everything's predetermined, that we have certain limitations. We're not going to fly, but we've got a lot of free will. And you know, if someone changes their diet, if they change certain structural things in their life, then they have control over their destiny in that regard. So
I agree with you. I think that too. I mean, I've experienced it. You know, I think I've seen and felt my life's timeline or whatever elongate by my decisions to live differently. And I've seen myself overcome genetic challenges and health challenges and eliminate them based on breath, like you're talking about, yoga, diet, lifestyle, all those things. So I agree with you. I don't think there's a fated set time. I think you can kind of pick it, but there is something I think about breathing.
Oh,
the longer you can breathe, it's that space somehow.
Absolutely. Absolutely. When we slow down the breath, the mind slows down, our bodies are more comfortable. There's a lot to that. It's a very low impact experience on the body. And so naturally that will help with longevity of life, certainly. I mean, the yogic ideal is that human beings have a lot of impact and have a lot of capability to enhance their condition, that it's not all predetermined per se, but these tools have an effect, like you're saying, about lengthening the breath and what effect that has on lifespan. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Very empowering. Empowering is the word I'm talking about. There's a lot of empowerment here.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah. And so this is something that should be reinforced. And the nice thing about a yogic lifestyle, like with the postures, they're all aligned with the breath. And so when you go to a yoga class, it becomes a very palpable experience when I should inhale. On every back bend, we inhale. We exhale on every forward fold. We exhale into every twist. We inhale out of every twist. And so just if someone has no interest in the breath and they go to a yoga class because it's so palpable, they will feel the benefits of that. And they may come out a quote unquote believer that that breathing is something important in their life. Yeah. So yeah, and going to a yoga class, doing a little bit of meditation, that will help reinforce healthy and proper breathing patterns. Yeah.
Cool.
It can enhance memory. There's going to be serious research on this in the future. The problem there, why there's no research on it now, there's no money in it. They want to research on things that they can profit off of and make medicines off of and sell to the public and things. But those people who are very interested and very keen, they will, and as yoga becomes more popular and as the mind-body relationship becomes more explored, that the mind is, one of the next fields of great exploration, then this is going to be a highly sought after topic, and there'll be tremendous strides made.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I mean, I think the cool thing is, part of what I follow and am obsessed with really is epigenetics and this concept of being able to, even the biohacker title, to hack your biology, the breath work and the yogic practices and the Ayurveda practices. I mean, that's a huge part of, working with your biology instead of against it, and supporting it. So I agree. I think there's going to be a lot of research done on breathing and how this impacts the brain, how it impacts your biology and your cellular structure. I think we've only scratched the surface of that, don't you?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. We are mental beings and we've hardly learned what the mind is and who we are. It's hardly explored. And that breath is the yogis have gotten realization on exhale, on kumbhak, retention of breath, and on exhalation to experience full expansion of mind and realization beyond one's own unit consciousness. And this is a revolutionary topic, and it's hard to believe we're really just talking about the breath because we all do it every day. But we haven't explored that as a humanity yet. And it's because of being so caught up in materialism of just indulgent satisfaction that all the finer qualities get dumbed down to this baseline of material satisfaction, where people do things that are harmful for themselves as just a matter of course, whether their dietary choices or their lifestyle choices or their sleeping patterns, whatever it may be, thinking patterns, just thought patterns. There's a big upside and the sky is the limit on it. Yogis have achieved tremendous realization by extending the exhale, by linking the mind with that rechak, with that exhalation, and combining with mantra, where the mind will just go beyond its current boundaries and just expand into that whole pool of consciousness, which, if you talk to someone, if people hear, typical Americans hear us talk, they'll think, you people are nuts. Go to the bowling alley, experience life, But there is that much there to explore, because the breath is the seed point to investigating who we are. And as far as the yogis are concerned, materialism is not the answer to who we are. Yeah. God, there's something far more.
I agree. And fun fact is breathing is really important in bowling.
yeah, that's also true. We should do a class on conscious bowling.
That is an awesome idea. We can market that.
That's true. I should not denigrate bowling or the role that breath has in bowling. That's very well put.
You know what's funny is speaking of this is only how a yogi would think, I think, but bowling and golfing are two things that the my dad, my brother, they love to do. And I like doing it. But it's all about breathing for me. So yeah. It's a funny thing. 'Cause when I'm swinging a golf club or, you're going to bowl. It's just all about the more conscious you become in your breath, the more clean your shot is, the more accurate your aim. I mean, it's just amazing. So breath, who knows? I mean, the depth of what your breath is doing, even in one of those activities, you know, is so important.
I forget.
They're just doing their thing. You know, they're just hitting or swinging or whatever. And they're not thinking about that breath and the breathing and the presence that you create in that moment by breathing can change everything about how you're experiencing something like a game.
Yeah, it's you put that in a very descriptive and meaningful way. And if you look at athletes these days and sports psychologists, they go over the breath. I mean, you know, when a basketball player goes to the free throw line, you know, there's 1 second left in the game and they need to hold, the first thing they're going to turn to is their breath. And you can watch them exhale as they go through their shot or just before they're about to do it. So it enhances everything. And what we can do in the physical sphere is fairly limited, but we live in a society that's very physically oriented right now. And the breath enhances our ability in the physical sphere. So what about in the psychic sphere when we're not nearly as limited? And if we were to really apply ourselves, just like the breath, the golf swing instructor or the opera or the voice instructor or any of those people where we're carrying out a physical process with the body and the breath is so key for that. And yet we live in our bodies are relatively limited. I don't think hardly anyone can lift 1,000 pounds by themselves. They may maybe 500, some people, or 600. But there's certain limitations we have. But in psychically, we don't have those limitations. We only have the limitations that we impose on ourselves, for the most part. The mind can do tremendous things. And when we apply that breath work to the mind, which is really the next step. Right now, people are applying breath work to physical things like the bowling, like the basketball player at the free throw line. Unless one's involved, like you are, like unless one's involved in psychic pursuits or psycho-spiritual pursuits, but they learn that discipline of breath to execute a physical task. That's the most common way the breath is applied at this point. Or they're doing it to do a mental task that has a physical expression, such as thinking and lawyering, or thinking and test taking. Whereas doing something with the eyes closed, which changes one's whole perspective, and using that breath, it becomes infinitely more powerful because there's a lot less limitations and there's so much to explore psychically. And the breath is so key to that exploration.
Yep, I agree. I agree. Well, and it's amazing. I'm really into like breathing into my cells. I don't really know how to explain it, but I'm just really into looking at my cells, cellular structure when I'm, you know, in meditation. And there's something about visualizing or imagining bringing the breath into every single like DNA strand of your body that just really, you can feel it in your whole body.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. It is that wholesome. It is that very, very foundational shift for our physical body. I mean, when I started yoga class, you know, or when I close the eyes, breathe, and one should feel a distinct shift. It should feel different. Not just that, oh, I can't see outside anymore. That's not the idea. One should feel a full vibrational effect shift. And that'll be on the physical plane, psychic plane, and spiritual plane.
Yeah, agree.
And I definitely appreciate what you're telling about your cellular on the DNA level, on that level. And on the psychic level, a lot of times what I'll do with folks when we're doing just taking a conscious breath or when we are in a meditation class is visualizing one's mental wavelengths and using the breath to flatten those, to straighten those mental wavelengths, elongating the breath, if you think of the mind or the breath as, or our mental wavelengths as like an EKG chart, that it can be, the mind can be very, very choppy, very choppy. And then as it becomes less choppy, its mind becomes more calm, and until it's just almost, you know, flatlined. And I do think in the future they will be measuring people's psychic wavelengths in that way, and for mental health, for spiritual well-being, different ways. But the breath is so instrumental for that. It's just a great tool to. And I don't care how accurate one's visualization is of their, well, is one's visualization of their mental wavelengths really the true presentation of that mind? It doesn't make a difference. Mm-hmm. Just the fact that they're trying to visualize something, that they will feel that vibrational effect and that shift in mind just by consciously breathing and trying to visualize it, and how accurate it is, you know. That's another matter. That's the goal is not to be accurate. The goal is to get that transformation of mind, and that happens.
You know? How do you, as a yoga instructor, hold space for breath? Because I've noticed, so I went through my yoga, the 200-hour yoga teacher training and teach yoga. And last year, before the global event, I was teaching, you know, 6 classes a week. And I was also going to some classes. And so I'm giving you this context for my question, because sometimes you're in a yoga class and it's like, inhale, you know, this, exhale, this, inhale. And you sort of don't actually have the time to do the full breath. I've noticed that, like, I'll find myself pretty far behind in a class because I'm just moving with my own breath and at my own pace. And it's not necessarily, so how do you as a teacher hold space for your students to truly breathe in the class through the asana practice? Because I think that's an art in and of itself.
It is. It's a tremendous art form. And it's much easier to get everybody on the quote unquote same wavelength when you're seated and not moving the physical body. And so I can say that guidance during in a yoga class at the beginning, during Shavasana and the final meditation, is when you can really rein in and you can really feel like everybody's working in the same pattern or very similar patterns, both psychically and with their breath work. In class, in through the movements, it's going to be radically different from person to person. Because for some people, the movements are very taxing, maybe because they're carrying extra weight, or because they're very stiff, or because they haven't practiced regularly. And for other people, they'll move very fluidly through it. And so how much physical exertion one person is doing, or some people get very nervous in balance poses and they totally lose their breath. So as a director or orchestrator or teacher, whatever you want to call it, I try and just give foundational principles. When you back bend, inhale. When you forward bend, exhale. When you go into a twist, exhale. When you come out of a twist, inhale. And I try and let everybody know this is what they should be. But then how they get to that inhale and how long they do it, that's up to them. But if they know those basic principles, then they'll be okay. And then everyone should breathe at their own rate. That's one thing you can't do. You can't say, okay, now we're all going to, you know, unless you're in a meditation and we're going to say, we're going to hold the breath for 6 seconds on it. That's safe. People can pretty much do it unless someone's on asthma medication or walking around with some type of breathing apparatus or a tank or something. But most people can handle that. But once the movements come, even in a relatively gentle movement, I don't think that can be fully synchronized from person to person. But if they know the basic foundational principles of when they should breathe or when they should be inhaling and exhaling, then that makes it what I would consider to be a safe and relatively effective way to do the practice.
Mm-hmm. I think that's super helpful. Thank you for going into that, because I think it's good to know. Because I think we get just really, whether you're teaching a class or you're engaged in a yoga class, it's challenging sometimes to really manage your breath and not feel out of sync somehow or another.
And sometimes teachers can be a little bit overzealous. Okay, inhale, exhale. And not with malintent, but that I find broad brushstrokes work better. And there was a friend of mine who used to teach, and she used to say, okay, just breathe. You know, don't sweat it out. Don't just breathe. And the people would laugh and say, okay. You know, because it can be overwhelming for students to get quite so many commands about breathing.
Yes.
And then they become a little bit stilted or self-conscious about it, and they try and catch up, and they leave more confused than comfortable with it. So, yeah, right.
I agree.
That as teachers, we should give them scope to explore and anyway. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. Well, you're talking to an alignment instructor, so I think for me, going slow is good. So it's harder to do a couple of breaths in each posture, but it's totally worth it because you might actually breathe in each posture at least once instead of maybe not even having the time.
Yeah. No, I think that's good. Generally, as the slower the posture is, probably have a more meditative. I know folks like to do some of the high impact classes. I'm also not against it, but those are definitely more meditative experiences that where the breath can really start to do its work. Yeah.
Yep. I totally agree. Yeah. Breath is so important.
Yes, no doubt. No doubt.
Do you teach breath classes? Like, do you do like breath work classes specifically, or how does that look in your studio?
I've done a lot of workshops on breathing. In fact, the title I used for this was from a community college class I used to teach called Conscious Breathing for Health, which was like a series of 3-hour or 2-hour classes. Yeah. And people were like, you're going to teach a 2-hour class on breathing? I'd be like, we won't even finish it they'd be like, this I got to see. And they just want to see, what are you going to talk about in breathing for 2 hours? You know, well, what are you going to experience? But once you get into the stages of breath and exploring the different aspects and really realizing that the time people would be like, I can't believe it. We, you know, 2 hours went by like that, and we didn't finish what we wanted to. Luckily, it was next week. So, and then I teach a morning renewal class these days, every Thursday morning at 8:00. And we do, it's a 10-minute physical postures, a very gentle physical postures, 5 minutes of breathing, and then 15 minutes of meditation. So you can say 20 minutes of, you know, with the breathing and meditation together. So, and we always go through the foundation of breath through that because it needs reminder. Yeah. I always find that whenever I remind myself, I am better off for it. So it doesn't get boring. That's one thing I find, that a good breath does not get boring.
That's true.
It doesn't get boring. You would think it'd get boring, but it doesn't. If you really apply yourself, because it has that experiential effect. You know, it's not just something, it's not like you're just reciting the state capitals. Okay, the first time you recite it might be interesting. Did you remember Jefferson City in Missouri, or did you confuse it with Jackson, Mississippi, or whatever it may be? But it doesn't become rote. The day breathing becomes rote is the day you're not breathing properly.
Yeah.
It should be very, and meditation's the same thing. It should be very engaging and exciting and luring you in to go deeper and deeper with it. And because there's that much room to explore.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So that's why it doesn't get boring. And that's why, when I first take that breath in a yoga class and I also get to close the eyes and breathe, I'm like, this is great. This is wonderful that it just doesn't get boring. It's always, it's always fueling, so, you know, empowering and self-propelling and So it's, yeah, it's
I
great.
I love that because, you know, I sit at my desk that I'm at right now, like most of the day. And sometimes my favorite thing to do is to like, remember to bring my chin in so that fluid's going to my brain and take deep breath. And it completely transforms that moment and your afternoon sometimes is that one breath. So I love what you're saying about it not being boring. It's so true. There's so much renewal in it. And just moving.
Exactly.
Remembering where you are and looking around the room and becoming aware of, you know, what's happening in that moment.
Yeah, it's remarkable. Yeah, there's no question. So, we got through the three steps, and I probably should go through one other four step just so people have the so we talked about the inhalation is Purakh, where you're drawing vital energy in, where a lot of times in the meditation sequences I'll lead is that you're drawing, coming into your psychic center. I'll use that you're moving in towards the center point of your mind. Then retention of breath is holding at that point, maintaining, creating that beautiful sense of pause. We inhale, we retain, and we just bring our whole human experience into a state of perfect pause. And an exhale goes into a state of expansion, of where mind expands its boundaries. And then the fourth step is that Shunya Kumbhak of keeping the air out before that next breath. And when we create space, especially between the Kumbhak and the Shunya Kumbhak, it changes the whole human experience. And people can do this on their own. Just literally, you inhale, retain the breath to a comfortable degree for you. Exhale. Keep the air out. And then inhale. And one cycle will lead to the next. The mind becomes more subtle. And you're on this entire adventure. And it's hard to believe that it's just by the breath. And that Kumbhak and Shunya Kumbhak, they are like enhancing points. When we breathe into our psychic center and then we retain that breath, it's like having an ice cream cone and putting 11 cherries on top or whatever favorite topping you like. That Purakh just allows you to hold on. It increases your vitality. It brings the whole human experience to a state of pause. It's a time to recover, to restore, to realize, to recondition, to recreate. So many great things are going on in that sense of retention of breath. And then exhale for expansion, for broadening your horizons. And then that Shunya Kumbhak is just like riding that wave out deeper and deeper out. And you get that full sense of expansion, of psychic expansion, which is what meditation's about. And then again to come back in, and each one builds on the next. So no breath, no two snowflakes are alike, and no two breaths are alike.
Mm.
You know, it just builds on the prior one. So you're going, I tell folks, don't stop. Don't put a threshold there. Cross that threshold. The next inhalation should go deeper. It should go deeper within. Because there's no way we can go, there's an infinite space in the mind to delve within. So always cross that next threshold and use each and every inhalation and exhalation to expand that whatever boundary, whatever expansion you achieve, that should be the record should be broken on the next exhalation. And whatever sense of beatitude and quietness and peace and stability and psychic composure you achieved on the inhale, that record should be shattered on the next inhalation. That there should always be this, you know what, this next breath, I'm going to realize something totally incredible that I haven't realized on the prior one. And it makes it, it doesn't get boring. It makes you just say, you know, I want to close my eyes and breathe now. Now I'm going to do, you know, that it has that type of value. And so it should never become a rote, mundane interaction. And just like a good relationship with, you know, people, we value those relationships with people where we're always broadening horizons. It's always new. It's not like same old, same old, same old, same old, you know, argument, this, a tit for tat, whatever it may be. When two dynamic people get together, they create a third thing, which is that relationship. And it's always new. It's going in, and people like that. They thrive in that. And it's healthy. It's dynamic. It's empowering. It's exploratory. It's mind expanding. And the breath is like that too, except it's a relationship with ourselves. But a good collective breath is good for humanity also.
Yeah, I totally agree. We have a question from Jennifer. She's saying, you know, she's feeling that the things that we are wearing on our faces could be causing anxiety due to inhibiting the breath. And I'm actually glad she brought that up because I just heard a really great practice about this. So when you are out and about and you are wearing face coverings and you're concerned about the breath, as somebody that I was working with the other day said that they've created a process for themselves that when they're out in public and they have to wear a face covering, that they focus on breathing even deeper and longer during that time. And of course, because she's doing that, she said she's really not feeling that anxiousness out in public or the stress. And it's becoming like this mindfulness practice for her. And I just really love that and thought, I'm going to do that too. Like, I like that idea of, you know, instead of feeling the anxiousness or the concern or what the constriction is or what that energy looks like, to instead expand the lungs and really breathe as deeply as possible and make it this mindfulness practice. What do you think, Satya? I really like that.
Yeah, I think that's great. I don't know the science of what effect the masks have, but I would take it as a challenge to maximize the breath. Just take it as an obstacle, and every obstacle in yoga is a helping force I'm sure that under ideal conditions, it's probably best if we don't have to use a mask. We're not in that condition right now. But what you were describing, I think that sounds pretty much spot on. And I could see how the mask could be limiting, especially where you can get caught up just rebreathing your CO2, you know, that high. Mm-hmm. So I think it's an excellent question. And that's not something I know the science on, but I could see how it would be constricting. And also in my own life, I have not had to wear a mask. I stay indoors. I'm staying in my house quite a bit. And I have not been to those public spaces where I've had to wear a mask for more than a few minutes. I don't know what it's like to wear a mask for 4 hours.
Sure. Yeah. Thank goodness I don't have to do that either. I mean, I work from home, so it's really when I'm going to a food store. Right. And so, you know, it's maybe 20 to 45 minutes at a time, and it's not extensive. And so, but I do think there's something to kind of staying conscious with your own self when you're out and about and doing breath work. And I just hadn't heard that. You know, I think we all just kind of have been getting through. And so I really love that practice. So I'm glad you brought that up, Jennifer.
That's well appreciated. And I think your response to it is good. It's not something I've really thought of. And not to mention, I didn't mention it once the whole in our whole session. So
yeah,
good question.
We're in our own reality, which is not that reality. But yeah. But yeah, it's a great question. It's a synchronistic question because this person I work with just brought this up. And I thought, gosh, I hadn't thought about it either, Sai. I mean, it really hasn't affected me because like you, I'm mainly in my home and I'm not really, you know, out and about in the public. And so, but I thought, what a great way to kind of change the paradigm of what you're feeling in that moment to bring the breath work to it. So
great. And that's a great way to go about it. Absolutely.
Yeah. So what are your parting words of wisdom? Can you believe it? I say this every episode, but time sure flies.
Yeah, it does. Oh, yeah. Well, I have a short little tale today. It's a pretty simple tale. But once there was a traveler, and he was going from hillside to meadow and meadow to mountainside. And he was just enjoying his travels and his discoveries. And then all of a sudden, he comes to this river. And he's on the bank of the river. And the river is rushing, and it's a strong running river. And he knows he can't walk across, and he has no idea how deep it is. And there's no one around. It's a thick forested area, and he doesn't see anyone on the other side. And he thought, there must be a way to cross somehow. And he looks up and down looking for a rope ladder, a rope bridge, a rowboat, something. But he doesn't see any indication of how to get across the river. So that's odd. And then all of a sudden he looks across and he says, he thinks he sees someone on the other side. And he says, hey. No, hey. And then he gets the other person's attention on the other side of the river. And he says, how do you get across? How do you cross? And the guy's like, because the water's making so much noise. He says, how do you cross the river? How do you cross? And finally the guy goes, oh, okay. So the guy on the other side hears and he gets it. And then with all his breath, the guy who's across the river says, you are across.
Ah!
Just one of those, you know, perspectives of life. You know, so we often think that we have to cross the river and have to go somewhere else. And often enough, where we are is where other people are trying to get to. And for him, that was the across where that guy was standing. So just one of those momentums that how often do we have already what we need and that we're looking externally for something different and we're actually in the right spot. You know, the yogic tool is like you're already self-contained winning. You're already a winning package. There's nothing you need other than to exercise those inherent talents and abilities that you have. But, you know, we always get caught up. It happens to the best of us to, you know, that perspective, like I need something that I don't, you know, that I don't have right now or don't seemingly have or that's across the river for me. And so we should always remind ourselves that ultimately we are across, you know, that we are where we need to be.
Oh, I love that so much. Thank you, Satyam, so much for being on as always.
No, this is great. Always wonderful to come in and share with you and talk with you. And so it's always a great experience.
I love it. And for everybody listening, Satyam's here every single month. And we have a brand new feature here at Buddhist Biohackers. So I have a few updates before we go. But a few notes. One is with all of our software updates that I'm so excited about, all of our shows are actually scheduled out now on our YouTube channel here at Buddhist Biohackers. So a few things. Please subscribe if you have not. We would love you to subscribe to our community. We do have a community page where we share all sorts of updates and things on there. But now you can actually look at upcoming live streams. You can even set reminders. So if you love hearing Satyam like I do, you can go in and you can actually set a reminder. His shows are scheduled out through the end of this year, and he'll be with us also in 2021. So you'll be able to see what's coming up, what topics we're going to be discussing, set reminders, and all of those things. So it's a really cool feature. And I also want to let everybody know, I did make the decision this week to turn monetization off for the Buddhist Biohacker episodes here on the YouTube channel. I want you to be able to enjoy these episodes ad-free. I also didn't align with the ads that were being shown, so I really just decided to turn it off. So we have a brand new patron program, which the link is in the show notes, and you just go to the lisamgunshore.com page. You can click on patron. You can donate. You can become a patron if you want to support us in that way. I think that's just a better, more aligned way for me than to have these ads on the channel. So I'm just letting you guys know I've changed that as well. And we're back next week. We have everything up and scheduled so you can see what's upcoming. And part two of Awakened Grace documentary series will be out this weekend. We're just working on some final technical uploading stuff. So that will be coming out. But if you've missed part one of Awaken Grace, you can see it right now on this YouTube channel, all sorts of stories of awakening. So there's my little updates for everybody. And Satyam, again, thank you so much for being here.
I know. Wonderful. Absolutely wonderful, as always. Thank you for the opportunity. Yeah. And for those who are interested, next month we're going to do something totally new called Yoga and Cancel Culture. We're going to discuss that. That'll be the topic for October.
Yes, I can't wait. I look forward to it every single month. And Satyam's also going to be on with Deanna Hansen talking about breathing some more next month. So you guys will be able to see that too. So thank you, Satyam, so much. Okay. Thank you, everybody who's been watching. Have an amazing Labor Day weekend if you're in the U.S. And otherwise, have a great weekend wherever you are in the world. All right. Bye, guys.
Okay. Take care, everyone.